timer is started.
All right, so welcome back to Forging Worlds, everybody, and we are working with the Shattered Spire, which that's just the name of it. I think this is the first time we actually have a name for it before
the end.
I think
we said it last time. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, but this is the first world that it's not the last episode that we decide what it's called.
It's nicer that it's not like a full planet with like massively detailed history. It's just some
massive space station instead.
Something floating out in space, doing its thing. So last time when we ended all abruptly, we were talking about the casino that lives in the Taurus section and extends out into space in like just a long, perfectly round, perfectly smooth spike. So let's start there. Just move from that into talking about some big hotel there on the Taurus as well. Cool. What's up with this casino? What's up with this thing?
One of the things that I like about this casino is that it gives us the opportunity to have people go to Taurus without going to the Spire.
Uh-huh.
But I also feel like one of the things you can win, quote unquote, in the casino is passage to the Spire.
Okay, so maybe like a day pass or something?
Yes, but I almost see it almost a little bit more underhanded than that. Like, it's never advertised. You don't go in there and be like, I'm going to get a pass to the Shattered Spire. But if you know who to talk to, and if you know whose hands to grease, and if you know which drinks to order, you can get set up to play a game. If you win, you go. If you lose, you lose something.
I think in keeping with this kind of underhanded deal, if you lose, you go too. Just not where you want. Just, you go the wrong way.
They put you in the maze or in the labyrinth.
No, because then the deal is like...
That's what the dungeon labyrinth was, right?
Yeah, it's the maze. Well, we'll need to talk about that when we get to the Shattered Spires. That might be a little too much on the nose of Sigil, but...
True.
We'll get there.
I also started watching Westworld, so mazes are in my head.
Okay. I think it's for that, because that is like some insane privilege. Like, I even kind of want to make it like once a year, there's one pass offered. It's good for a lifetime of entry, and it requires no security check. It requires no business requirement for entry. It's just, you can, like, this guy, maybe even like the casino, the owner is on the council.
Okay.
So he's worked out this deal where it's like, we're going to bump my revenue up by having this game once a year for this super pass. But
well, okay, go ahead. You have a but.
The stakes are your life.
Yes.
You either win or die.
And it's only for 12 hours. Once a year, 12 hours in the Spire.
No, well, I think the pass is offered once a year, but it's just like a lifetime pass.
No. But that's what I mean. Like, it's offered once a year, but it gets you 12 hours. You can use that over the course of a year. You can use that over the course of a lifetime. Because if you use it properly, you should never spend more than 30 minutes in the Spire. The Spire is dangerous.
I like that idea of a time limit, but I don't know. Like, I feel like a normal pass should be like a 6-hour pass or a 12-hour pass. But like, this one is like, if you win, because you're gambling literally all of your life away for it, if you win, this is unlimited. Like, this is the black card. This is like the one that they don't talk about. You're everything about you is in the system now, and you just get like, when you show up on station, they're like, no, you go to this docking bay, there's your private portal right over, like there's your lift into the Spire, it's fine. You don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to, you just go. Because it's like the blood of
a
dozen people is on this card. So.
I get it. That means what is in the Spire that will make people risk that much.
Here's the thing. I don't know if there is anything. Like, I think by and large, like the attitude about what goes on in the Spire is so, like, bottled up and, like, secretive almost, that when people get there and they find out that it's, like, these two just split down the middle social class groups that are just basically, like, almost always at each other's throats, held in balance by this one council made up of equal parts of both sides, that it's just like, why am I here? Oh, because I can get everything.
Well, that's true. You can get anything. You can get everything. I also think we need to expand that definition.
This is actually an important distinction. On the Taurus, you can get anything. On the Spire, you can get everything.
Ooh, that's a good pitch.
Like, that's the hook for the adventure that goes along with this, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you've been to the Taurus once or twice. Your spelljammer's docked there. And you know you can get anything on the Taurus. But you keep hearing these whispers about the Spire itself. And they tell you, on the Spire, you can get everything.
Immortality. Beauty.
Everything.
Youth. Everything. And I think that's an important... I like the fact that people don't actually know the answer to that question. And it could change from whomever's running the game. Mm-hmm. So any GM that picks this up could put whatever they want in there and take out anything that they don't. My immediate train of thought goes to Cortez and the Fountain of Youth.
Mm-hmm.
That you basically do a spelljammer version of the Fountain of Youth. That it is supposedly on the Spire, somewhere in the gilded section, and you want it.
I feel like there's an opportunity here to do a couple of different, like, not branching paths, that's the wrong phrase, but to do a kind of thing where we just be like, here are some options for the GM. One, this idea where you can get everything on the Spire, that's true, but it is contingent upon who you talk to. Like, there's that option where it's like, yes, you can get everything. Now you're going to have to do all the favors to get up to doing everything, because mm-hmm. eventually you have to get it from the elementals.
Okay. Counter argument to that.
Okay.
Then what's the point of the black card?
Oh, the black card gets you there.
Okay. So it's kind of a trick. It's a catch 22. You have the card, you think you're good, you get there, and it's like, that doesn't mean anything now that you're here.
Yeah, I feel like this whole thing is like, anyone can go to the Taurus. That's fine. That's fair game. People go there and live their entire lives on the ring and don't ever go to the Spire. Partially because some people probably know the deal. Some people just can't. But it's like, you have to have business, and typically you're limited on the amount of time you can be over there.
That begs another question.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the people that live there?
On the Spire?
Uh-huh.
Here's the trick. I think they're the same people, and the whole dichotomy between the gilded and the plated is just centuries of life have just kind of... It's like how some people will never, ever like, I don't know, a baseball team. And some people will never, ever like another baseball team.
That reeks a little bit too close to not even classist, but almost racism. Which, I mean, worlds need to have imperfections. So, it's a little squeaky to me, but it's in that squeaky of... I could see it happening and be uncomfortable with it, but it makes sense within the world we're developing.
Well, and even it could even be something just like everyone honors the code to get into the Spire. But once you're there, like, wealthy high class people are still going to look down on new wealth or low class people that somehow managed to make it across. Like, that can be the divide right there. Like,
one thing that I was thinking, and this is in a very different direction.
Okay.
is that one of the secrets of the Shattered Spire, one of the things you cannot see when you're coming in because the Torah obscures it, it's not connected. There is a gap in between the Gilded Spire and the Plated Spire. They haven't had contact in centuries, and the gravitational forces of the Taurus is the only thing that's holding them together instead of having them just float out into space.
Well, and probably, like, magic.
Well, yes. And, you know, they have portals back and forth between the two, and they have ways to get from one to the other.
Okay.
But you can't just walk there. Like, a person who lives in the Gilded side probably has never seen a plated person. Unless they're a business person that deals in trade
with that side.
The question then too becomes, what do they offer each other that keeps this even uneasy truce?
Okay. I wanna bounce off of that. Look at that image I sent you.
Looking.
See that big section right in the middle?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what if we say that that's not connected to either side? That's neither gilded nor plated. There's not a dividing line there. That is functionally like port of entry to the spire itself. Like, that's where everything arrives.
It's kind of a demilitarized zone.
Kind of like a neutral zone, kind of almost. And it's more a gigantic mall or bazaar or flea market.
Okay.
Like, it is like the central, like, space. And I'm almost picturing it being like just a massive, almost outdoor ecosystem. Just contained in this.
That's cool. Ring. So it, like, you're looking out into space.
A little bit, yeah. Like, and it just, you can go through all these different levels. It's all different terrain and different ecology. But the point is, this is where all business happens between the Taurus, the Gilded, and the Plated. And in the very, very center of it, isolated even from the rest of it, is the Chamber of the Elementals.
Ooh, okay.
And built around that, in a ring around that space, are the offices and, like, are the offices of the Council and their meeting room.
I like it.
So people can, like, walk by and be like, oh, that's where the elementals are. That's what keeps us all going. But you have to have, like, almost a passport. Like, if you live in the Gilded section, the only way you get back to the Gilded section is, these are my, like, papers, please.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. But here's the other thing I want to suggest. What if there's not an issue? So what if there's no conflict between them? What if it's just, they just exist. They're like almost three separate states that just happen to exist on this one big object. They are brought together there at some point for some reason. They've added people to their numbers, and like the spire itself is kept as a controlled entry and exit process because there's like, oh, there has been a limited amount of resources. Which is what motivated those two council guys to go get the lightning elemental.
I like that better. That the reason that there is a division of resources, and the only way to keep it fair is to keep it divided.
Mm-hmm. Which I think also goes a long way to explaining like why the two different halves look so different. Why one is just like, looks like it was blasted and one looks like it was constructed.
Mm-hmm.
Is because I honestly think originally, the original intent when resources started getting tight, like the wealthier upper class, whatever people that live in the Gilded section, like maybe, I don't know, some sort of nobility class or maybe artisan or mage, something like that happens up in the Gilded side. They were like, okay, great. We have a solution. We're going to present to the council. We take the bottom half of the spire. We knock a lot of, and we just basically like separate it out very carefully, very constructedly, so that we're going to be preserving resources by getting rid of excess non-usable, non-viable space, which is why the plated side looks like it's all nice, clean lines, really well organized. And then eventually, like, the gilded side, the council is eventually like, great, that helped for a while. And then 20, 30 years down the line, they're like, hey, we need y'all to do this side. And they're just like, yeah, no. And eventually it was like, almost like warring houses, kind of, where people were just like, fine, we'll do it, but we're going to try to carve our own chunk off.
Okay.
And this is going to be like our house.
In the middle of our street.
Which is why. Yeah. Which is why it looks way more like patchwork and all broken down.
I like it.
So there's not, like, I'm sure there's tension because there's always tension between groups of people. But I don't know that it's like a violent tension or like active opposition. It's just like, we're from the gilded side. Y'all are from the plated side. You chumps are from the Taurus. Y'all can leave now.
And they both hate the Taurus.
And the Taurus hates both of them.
Well, it's not or even the Taurus that they hate. It's the tourists that they hate.
Oh yeah. Fuck a tourist.
Like, they are... I think it's much more interesting. I like that they work together and that they don't have bad blood, but they do have this uniting
kind of loathing,
despise of outsiders, of non-Spirans, or however we want to say it. To the tune of the leadership, even though people don't think they do, the leadership stays in contact with each other. Every transaction, interaction, everything's logged. Everything. So if you try to go from one side to the other, like, you cause trouble in the plated side, the gilded side will know. And vice versa.
And there's probably some people that are like, yeah, that was funny. You're good here. You get, like, a little bit of a discount. And there's some people that are like, okay, so you're a troublemaker? You can go now.
Yeah, we're either going to kick you out or put you in jail. I also like the idea of... you know, people on the gilded side being like, oh, this person is naive, or this person is whatever, you can charge them whatever you want, or this person is shrewd, watch out. You know, like, they're sharing information like this all the time.
Oh, yeah. And I think what the original divide probably was, like, culturally, like, who got on what side was, one side was the magic and the academic, and one side was, like, artisans and craftsmen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and because that's just kind of how cities develop over time like that. Like, there's, in kind of this fantasy, medieval fantasy kind of setting, there's usually, like, an artisan's quarters. Like, right. An artisan quarter and things like that. So, like, that's probably not as true now. Like, I'm sure there are artisans in the gilded side, and there are magic shops down in the plated side now too, and also on the Taurus, but like, their original intention kind of colors how that particular society grew up. So there are definitely, like, if you live on the spire itself, on the shattered spire itself, then you don't go to the mall for business unless it's with someone from the Taurus,
right?
Like, you have, there's got to be a system between the two spires where they can, like, I think they also can get passes to, like, one side or the other, like, by an invite system rather than whatever right. happens on the Taurus. So they get that chance where they're like, okay, I've got this huge commission for this guy up on the top level of the gilded spire, of the gilded side. I've got to get it done. I'm going to go take it up to him. I've got 6 hours to be over on that side. That gives me enough time to go present it to him, grab a drink with my buddy a few levels down, and go maybe do some, salesmanship to this other guy that's got his own house. And then I can get home right at the bare nick before my pass expires, and I'm forcefully teleported out.
Right. What this is leading me to think, there is some sort of psionic... something happening here.
Okay, would you agree? What do you mean?
That, like, we're talking about them being able to share information and know who's going where and why. And one of the cleanest explanations I think we can go with is that somehow, and I think it has a lot to do with the elementals, the people of the Spire are psionically linked, almost like a hive mind. They're still individuals, obviously. Like, they are still individuals. But there is a repository of psychic information that rests within the Chamber of the Elementals.
So what if it's almost like an Ethernet?
Yeah.
Like an internet. So,
but psychic.
Psychic or artifice?
True.
Like, what if we're going with the D&D fantasy side, like, I've got no problem with psionics, as long as we're not talking about those stupid shard mines from 4th edition.
Hashtag soul knives forever. Hashtag
soul blades. I have thoughts about those stupid crystal boys. so I'm thinking, what if instead they have, like, something that's almost, like, soul-bound to a person, but it's just, like, a cuff or, like, a set of goggles or something, and it's, like, they can access that information. And sometimes it comes up, like, visually. Sometimes it's like a psychic dump into the mind of just, like, some knowledge about a person. But you have to be able to query it. So the elementals have that omniscient knowledge of the entire station. Taurus, gilded, plated, maul, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
They allow people on the spire itself to tap in and do, like, a search, almost. But they have to know what they're searching for. So they can't just be like, elves. I want to know everything about all elves on the spire. That won't work. Like, then it'll basically just kick out, like, a Wikipedia article on elf. But if they're like, I want to know about Kael Orin, the smith, the elvish smith, mm-hmm. in the plated side, then it's just like, whomp, here you go. Here's when he's free. This was the last time we went to the gilded side. These are not like as police state as like known associates, unless you're on the council, but.
Right. What about, okay, so when you say that they have to query, and this is probably getting too deep in the weeds, but this is how my brain works. Are we talking a vocal query? Are we talking the ability to manipulate something, to put in information? How are you describing this? Because I have a thought.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that sets Spireans apart is this ability.
Okay.
What if it's like something implanted?
Ooh, Alan. What if it's like almost like a soul gem from the Elder Scrolls?
Ooh, okay.
But it's got, like, it's just a super small, almost basically like a crystal needle, almost. Mm-hmm. But it's been, like, every single one of the elementals has, like, imbued it. Or maybe just one. Like, you're more attuned to the fire elemental. Or you're more attuned to the earth elemental. And that's, like, implanted in you. Like, and I do mean, like, implanted in mm-hmm. you. And it's just part of who you are now. It can't be removed. It can't be negated. But if you're not on the spire, it also does you no good.
Right.
Like, maybe it gives you, like, a slight bump in, like, a... Like, in game terms, it should have some effect, like, you are slightly psionic. Or, like, you can get a feeling off of people occasionally, or something like that.
I like that. Because I also think that it would be interesting... That is the ultimate prize for some people. Is a soul needle.
Oh, a soul needle. That's very good. Is that part of what comes with the black card, the unlimited pass?
Ooh.
Or is it that you have an opportunity to earn citizenship on the spire? Like, legally. The black pass is, like, just that the is start. The
only legal way to become a citizen.
Well, I don't know that I like the idea that a life or death gambling thing is how is the true. Only way in. I do think that the black card is the only way in, and the casino, which we should probably also call the soul needle just because of its shape, and that would be like
Right.
Just the kind of borderline offensive thing that whoever owns it would do. What if they're able, like, only maybe like 50 black cards are given out in a year. Or in whatever their year equivalent is.
Mm-hmm. In a cycle.
Yeah. The proprietor of the Soul Needle has a contact in the council, and like the whole council knows about this. They don't care. They're just like, yeah, this is great fun. Go ahead. Here, you can have one every year. One of the 50 goes to you. And so he can put on this like high stakes poker game for it or whatever. And then like the other 49 are like maybe like a visiting relative or a mentor of someone. Like if you have the right pull, you can put in an application for you to be given one of those black cards to be given out to someone else.
Hmm. Interesting.
And maybe that's also like what a lot of the like inter-house politics is on the Spire. Is like, who do I have to curry favor with to get this person access to get a black card so I can get this specific person to come live in the Spire and join my house? Because I imagine there's like, listen, you can't have a place like this without having insane politics. And maybe that's just part of it. And like the black card is the first step. Prove that you can handle this responsibility, and we will consider you for full citizenship. But we like that idea of the black card being like the first step to citizenship, and that they're kind of a prized possession.
Yes, I do. Because that opens a lot of very interesting doors, and also closes a lot of interesting doors, which I think is even more interesting. So when a child is born on the Spire, mm-hmm. they are not automatically a citizen.
I think there's probably like a temporary kind of like a rite of passage kind of deal. Like you have until you are coming of age, whatever that is for your culture, you're just like considered a resident by lieu of your parents.
Right.
As long as you have parents to claim you.
But then, like, there is some sort of ritual or coming of age ceremony or something that bestows the needle.
I think some families, some people can just do that, yes. And some people, like, those kids have to earn a spot like everybody else, child or no. And I think that varies house to house, family to family, things like that.
And I like that. I like that there's a little bit of randomness to it, that you can have a family that's kind of vindictive almost.
Mm-hmm. Like, you can get some real Minzo Brasnan shit going on up in here. And you can also have just, like, perfectly happy, like, artisan families that have lived on the Spire for as long as anyone can remember, and they just...
Okay, this ties into my plot hook, but this has to be asked.
Okay.
Are needles passed down?
Ooh. I think a family can inherit a needle of a dead relative.
Because I literally have written down needle of the dead. Because what if, like, let's say it's the patriarch or the matriarch of the family.
Mm-hmm.
They die. When the needle is removed, whenever it's placed into a person of the same bloodline, they can tap into the memories of the patriarch or the matriarch. And if it's the same needle for generations,
there's a massive... I like that, and I want that. I also think there needs to be like a... Like, that ability exists in every needle. Like, you can
right.
access the memories of all previous owners of the needle, bloodline or no. But no one really knows about that. Like, it is said that it's only for a bloodline.
Mm.
But if you can work the system right, if you can work, like, the querying process right, you can find the memories of anyone. It's just no one or very few people have ever worked out how to do that in a non-bloodline way.
And it also could drive them insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
So, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of this casino.
Only a little bit. We may have just introduced, like, the biggest cultural thing about this civilization.
Yeah. I'm very happy about what the Soul Needle has done. As far as the casino goes. So, we have the name. It's the Soul Needle Casino. It's this massive spire that extends out into space on one end, and I've kind of drawn a little idea of what the inside of the torus might look like.
Ooh, I can't wait to see.
Just super kind of roughly. And so basically, like, it extends that, that, like, spike extends up a little bit into the torus and is, like, a major landmark in the torus ring on the inside, too. But let's put a pin in the casino. When we get back around near the end, we need to talk about who runs it. So we need to be thinking about that. But let's talk about what's on the exact opposite side of the Taurus, which I think should be like the nice upscale hotel, like almost like a resort, almost like a Disney World.
Yes, that the people who work there are unfailingly polite and courteous. You cannot get away with much there. Like, that if you are violent, if you do something to disturb the peace, you will be ejected.
And if you disturb too much peace, you will be ejected out
into space.
Yeah.
Like, there are other hotels. There's only one resort.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely, like, the place that is fostering the idea of where all your dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the part of the Taurus that's like, we can get you anything.
Exactly. And I also like that part of that, the implication is that we can connect you with anyone. So if you stay there and you are like, well, I am interested in getting a sword from this blacksmith on the plated side, within an hour, they have a scroll for you that is a two-way communication scroll between you and that person. But you pay out the butt for this.
I think even to the point where patrons of the resort, like, the resort occupies probably, like, the entire arc of the Taurus of mm-hmm. their section, like, is just the resort, and it's probably, like, a big swath, too, on the circle of it, but, like, the arc of the inside of the Taurus ring is, like, a big part of that's a resort, so much so that the outside are private docking bays for the patrons.
Yes.
Including probably almost, like, a valet kind of thing, where mm-hmm. it's, like, this is where you'll drop off. You didn't pay to have a private docking bay as part of your suite. So you'll park here, you'll unload, and then one of our courtesy pilots, who are the best,
mm-hmm.
will move your ship down to, like, almost like a warehouse, where it's like, you could be parked next to your worst enemy's, like, your rival Captain Spelljammer down there, and you won't ever know it because you're not going to your ship.
Right. So basically, I see this as the resort is large enough that they can offer biomes to fit pretty much any person or any species with choices. So let's say that they know humans are coming. Oh, would you like to be here on this, like, tropical beach? Or would you like to be here that is kind of simulated mountains? Or would you like to be here where it's more temperate? You know, like, infinite choices, seemingly infinite choices and infinite possibilities.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love the idea that this is just like, Alan.
Matt.
So remember what we talked about. There's a dichotomy on the spire itself between the council and the elementals.
Uh-huh.
So what if that dichotomy is echoed on the Taurus?
Hmm.
The casino is, like, sponsored by the council. They're aware of what goes on there. That's kind of their kind of almost embassy. Not really. Not in any real way. But the resort is the elementals' presence on the Taurus, almost.
Interesting. That fits in with what I was thinking of who ran the casino.
So, like, the resort gets almost a direct pipeline to some of the elementals' powers.
So that's how they can change the environments.
Uh-huh. Or how they made the environments. I don't know that they change a lot. I think they just, like, maintain those. And it's part of, like, the what we had talked about originally with, like, the spire being able to produce, like, any sort of biome for extinct fruits and,
mm-hmm.
like, species. I think the resort actually does that. And on, like, the safer ones, like the ones that are habitable, they built bungalows and things, basically, like space fantasy bungalows.
I really like that. This actually kind of goes back to what I was thinking for who runs the casino. This isn't very original. The Triad. And the Triad being a member of the Gilded, a member of the Plated, and a member from the Middle.
Okay.
They dress in black, or they dress in, like, silver, gold, and bronze.
Okay. I like that. So it's three people running. Ooh.
So that way, again, fairness in a casino, which is laughable.
Plot hook time, though. And we're going to skip ahead a little bit. It's not three people anymore.
Ooh.
It's one person who is
pretending
a very, very talented spellcaster in one specific school.
Illusion. Interesting.
And he has the backing of the council. In fact, Alan, he's on the council.
Ooh, conflict of interest.
That's how he's able to get that much power, because he has that council boost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that it's a conflict of interest. Like, this guy, until we, like, touch on it and nail it down later, like, this guy might not have a conflict of interest. Like, this might just be like, I'm more or less the one of two representatives for the Taurus on the council. And, like, one predecessor died. We couldn't find a replacement for him. Like, the bronze, or the gold one, died. We couldn't find a replacement that met our criteria. So I just made an illusion of myself. And then the plated member of the Triad died, and I was just like, well, I'm already this deep, I may as well just own this whole thing.
The reason I say conflict of interest is because the Soul Needle has the ability to give out Soul Needles.
Mm-hmm.
Having person in charge of that is a seriously unchecked piece of power.
I think
because of course you can rig the game.
Well, yeah, and I think kind of the limiting factor there is he doesn't, or they don't. They are actually, like, slavishly devoted to the idea of
fairness,
like, within the confines of everyone expects the house to win. Mm. So that's fair. But in that game, in that one high-stakes game where people are literally putting their lives on the line, he is like, no, utter fairness. And in fact, I think it used to be that, like, when you died, it was in a special room, probably at the very tip of the spire.
Mm-hmm.
When you died, like, you were in a chamber almost, and it would just be, like, open to space, and you would get sucked out immediately.
See?
Originally. Now, though, now the other 11 people that don't get the card are given the option of becoming the council's eyes and ears, like an emperor's hand almost.
Mm.
Agents that don't ever get to go to the spire, because that's the deal. They get their entire, like, body redesigned, maybe to, like, their specification. Is there something they don't like? They can fix it there. It gets magically rebuilt, and they operate on the Taurus, and they operate out in the wider D&D world.
Interesting.
As a spy network now. And that was how this guy sold to the council. One, like, give me a seat and I'll do this for you. And two, you let me keep giving you guys spies and you don't worry about it when I just have all this power. Because I am one of you.
That's interesting. I like that a lot.
So, let's talk more about this resort. Let's go back over to the resort. Let's talk about that, because I feel like it's got to be the polar opposite of the Soul Needle, right?
Right. The thing is, like, I actually want it to be pretty clean. Not, well, obviously clean as in clean, but clean as in above board. That the resort represents everything that the Tauros and the Shattered Spire want to project that it is.
Or even what it was intended to be.
Right.
And, like, people have gotten in the way of that, which is why parts of the Taurus are probably, like, massive slums. And why there is such rampant corruption.
But that's the other reason the motto is, where dreams come true. It is the dream of the Spire made real.
Mm-hmm.
Even though dreams are not reality.
It's true. What if... Okay. So you know how there's that deal? Like, if you're an employee at Disney, at Disney World, you just get, like, free access to the parks?
Mm-hmm.
What if there's kind of that deal at the resort, too? Where if you're an employee, you get free access to what is arguably, like, the nicest place on the Taurus, but you have to live there. And it turns almost into, like, hey, we are now your family. So, like, we'll pull you out of the slums. Absolutely. We want you to come work with us.
It's kind of like an indoctrination, almost.
Almost. And I think...
But it's...
Because...
But I don't want it to be, like, nefarious.
No. It's just, it is the natural counter to the what the council's doing with the soul needle on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's the elementals who are like, oh, wait, hold on. You guys get a spy network? We get a spy network. We're not going to take from these, like, people that are so desperate they're willing to gamble their lives away that come in from God's only know where out in the wider D&D universe.
Right.
We're going to take it from our own population. And give them better lives. Give them, like, heal them.
Give them trust.
Rejuvenate them.
And hope.
Give them trust. They're not going to be, like, secret agents out in the cosmos. They're going to be them. But, like, the best version of them.
Yeah.
We're going to, like, train them up. And they're not going to be necessarily a spy agency so much as, like, a counter to the council ever turning their spies into assassins.
Right.
So I feel like eventually down the road...
That's the inevitable.
Because one day the council is going to be like, we gotta do something about these elementals. And the elementals are going to be like, aw, we have to go back to a war again. That sucks. Okay.
Too bad we're immortal and you're not.
We're immortal and we have absolute control over everything on this station. Think this through. But because they're mortal people, they don't.
Nope. And because they're arrogant.
The last four councils haven't thought it through either.
Or, plot hook, they have something the elementals somehow don't know about.
Probably because it's not on station.
Yep.
And I think there's also that option where it's like, or somehow this is like, the plot hook has got to be like, either they have this something that can kill an elemental, or you have to go and, like, negotiate them down, basically. It's like, guys, be the one time in all of recorded literal history, and that's our timer,
yep,
where y'all don't go to war with them and lose. Just don't do it.
Yeah, but it's going to happen, so...
Of course it is. So that's going to be the end of episode 2 of this great little world.
I'm really excited. I think we're building something really neat here.
I kind of love this Shattered Spire. I'm already thinking of ways to run, like, one-shots on it. Mm-hmm. So, I guess until next week, I've been Matt.
And I've been Alan.
For John, you can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, ForgingWorlds@FifthDraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at FifthDraw.com. Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.